91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. We've always heard that the only sure things in life are death and taxes. Well, now there's a third one. It's identity fraud. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Since 2005, more than a billion sensitive records with personal identifying information have been leaked. How can we protect ourselves or at least minimize the risk of data breaches? We speak with consumer advocate and identity theft expert Adam Levin. He's the author of Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. It's filled with essentials for surviving the ever-changing world of online security. Of course, we'll be taking your calls as well. Topical Currents up next, after the news. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper's still under the weather. We hope to have him back with us tomorrow. Well, today we visit with identity theft expert Adam Levin. He's a consumer advocate, chairman and founder of Identity Theft 911, and chairman and co-founder of Credit.com. Mr. Levin has written an essential guide to surviving this changing world of online security. He writes, "It's not a question of if we'll become victims of identity theft, it's a question of when." He's the author of Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. And Adam Levin joins us from San Francisco. Welcome, Adam.
Bonnie, thanks for having me, and I don't mean to be the bearer of depressing news. But.
Well, you are. This was like reading a horror novel, except that it's a true horror story. The monsters are real, but the good news is you do have lots of help for us, right?
No, there are all sorts of things that you can do,
right?
But you have to really be in the right mindset. You have to say to yourself, "Look, breaches have become the third certainty in life, behind death and taxes." The identity theft that flows from them is almost inevitable. It's just a question of when, not if. That since 2005, some people think actually since perhaps 2012, over 1 billion. Now think of Dr. Evil, pinky to the lip, 1 billion files containing personal information have been exposed to people who had absolutely no right to see them and in fact are going to exploit them for their benefit. And as a result, each of us is going to become a victim at least once, if not multiple times in our lives, of multiple forms of identity theft.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I was talking to someone about your book and they said, "Oh, you know, my identity's already been stolen." And I said, guess what? Yeah, once is sometimes not enough. So
you can't use the "I gave it the office" line when it comes
right.
to identity theft. It's a heinous crime. Unfortunately, it is an evolving crime. It mutates. There are many forms of it. You know, most of us are familiar with identity theft as basically a compromised credit card account, or someone might have tried to crawl into your bank account, but they were stopped at the gate. Unfortunately, people don't think in terms of medical identity theft, criminal identity theft, child identity theft, tax fraud-related identity theft, and the list, unfortunately, goes on and on.
Well, we're going to get to as many as we can. One thing I realized from reading your book, and I am guilty of this myself, and I think many people might relate, this is a situation where doing the most convenient thing or burying our heads in the sand or being lazy or in denial is going to result in unimaginable horror. So please explain what I mean by that.
Well, the problem is, because identity theft has really become a pandemic, and because so many creative, sophisticated, and very persistent people are now involved in stealing identities, and keep in mind the fact we have day jobs, and as a result of that, when it comes to a lot of other things in our lives, we're distracted. Unfortunately for these guys, we are their day job, and that there's such a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for them. They're not just stopping at opening new accounts. I mean, they want to get medical treatments. They want to get prescription drugs. They want to get therapies. in your name with your information. They want to commit crimes where the trail of breadcrumbs leads back to you, where you end up on a no-fly list. As a result of medical identity theft, you could be lying on a stretcher outside an emergency room, and your life is in jeopardy because someone having stolen your identity and used it for medical purposes has had their information commingled with your information in your medical files. And suddenly your blood type changes, allergies, which you do have, which could be life-threatening and require a certain course of treatment, are now replaced or become invisible with new allergies that require a different course of treatment. You end up with an issue with the Internal Revenue Service. And you know, with the IRS, it's about more than money. When you're on their list and they're looking at you for a long period of time, that's not a good thing. When crimes are committed in your name, you could end up in the crosshairs of the NSA, of the FBI, of a variety of state and local law enforcement authorities, and suddenly you're pulled over for a busted taillight, and suddenly you're thrown on the ground, handcuffed, guns to your head. And if you attempt to, you know, go into your pocket to get something that would prove you're not who they think they are, you are, or they think you are,
right,
you could end up dead on the street. So these are the kinds of dangers that we face. It's a whole different world.
Well, I want to talk about just an email I got this morning, okay? I want to focus, turn our attention to begin with the IRS. I got an email from the, in quotes, IRS this morning saying, "We require all taxpayers to update their information for security measurement. The IRS continues to work to bring the viewable, printable functionality of the application back online in the near future with enhanced identity protection security features. In the meantime, taxpayers need to complete physical address as it appeared on your 2014 tax return. Update and verify your information by clicking the link below."
Bingo.
Just this morning I got this.
This is part of what I lovingly refer to as the pantheon of ishings. And because so much information has been stolen over the past few years and so many files have been exposed, and so much information is in context, like, for instance, you're a Target shopper. This is way beyond the fact that your credit cards have been compromised.
Right.
There was a second file. In that file were names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, which means that someone masquerading as Target could contact you, asking you to do certain things or to click on a link that might be a sale, or in your case, the Internal Revenue Service, that might be something that has some relevance to either a more accurate file or a potential violation in your file, or you'll get a letter from some other institution, perhaps a charity, pitching something to you based on something that they know from all the information that's out there, be it social networking or breaches about you, that you would be inclined toward sympathy toward this charity. And they're going to come after you. And they want you to click on a link for one of two reasons. Either A, it's going to put malware on your computer, which will turn your computer into a transmitter. And what they're particularly interested in is every time you log into anything, especially a financial services site, they want to know, they want that information, because they want to get into your financial services site. Or they want to take you to a clone site that looks incredibly authentic. And you think it's the site that makes sense, because these are the guys that contacted you, but it's not. And what they're trying to do is get you to give up more information so that they have more tiles to the mosaic of your life so they can commit identity theft using your information.
And, of course, on here it says, failure to update your information would result in delay of other tax benefits.
Absolutely.
So, always a threat. You know, a recent Miami Herald op-ed by Jesse Panuccio calls Florida ground zero for identity theft. Your findings on that?
Yes. Very true. You know, sort of every year it floats around. But what's very interesting, what's very consistent over the past several years, states that are considered border states, states where people will come into the United States from foreign countries, have become hot points for identity theft. Arizona, for many years, was number one. California, Texas, Florida, what do they share in common? Entry points, border states.
So it's not just the senior population. We're more vulnerable because of all of the traffic we have from all the immigration.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that, people are looking for information for illegal employment. Senior populations, some states, because there's a young population, there's an enormous amount of identity theft involving children. In fact, a child's identity is a gold mine for an identity thief. Why?
Yeah, because they don't check it.
That's right. The Social Security number is pristine because it really isn't used for anything. And that once they get it, they've got a run that could be as long as 15 or 17 years because kids don't check their credit. Parents very rarely ever check their kids' credit. And until recently, very few states have been willing, along with the credit reporting agency, to actually create a file for a child and then freeze it. Now, there was an interesting recommendation a few years ago by the Identity Theft Resource Center in San Diego to create what's called a 1710 registry. And that means from the date someone is born till they're 17 years, 10 months, which is about the time they'd start looking for maybe either a college loan or maybe to get their first car or maybe their first credit card. And your name, your month and year of birth, and your Social Security number would go on an index, much like the death index. And that every time a credit report was run for the purpose of approving credit, that it would also have to be run against the 1710 index. And if any of those Social Security numbers came up, it would be an immediate red flag.
And what happened?
Well, it's still in the proposal phase. Now, 17 states now do allow you to create and freeze a child's credit file, and that there are certain states that are now experimenting with a version of the 1710 registry, but it hasn't yet gotten national acceptance. And part of it is because privacy advocates are scared to death that yet again there might be another database with millions and millions of names and Social Security numbers and dates of birth that could potentially be hackable.
We're speaking with consumer advocate and identity theft expert Adam Levin about his book Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. A short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman visiting with Adam Levin, identity theft expert, consumer advocate. He's chairman and co-founder of Credit.com and an author. He's written Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. Adam, let's just pick off where we left off about the child identity theft. Would you explain how that happens? How do they get children's numbers, and what can parents do to protect them, short of this initiative that you were talking about that hasn't happened yet?
Sure. Well, one of the ways they get the information is that there are people who work in medical facilities or with healthcare providers who have access to files, and in those files have the Social Security numbers of children, and they've stolen them. I mean, there's been case after case after case where that was involved. In addition to which, if you'll note that during 2015, with the breach of Anthem, Premira, Excellus, CareFirst, the year before, Community Health Services, many prominent hospitals around the country have had breaches. You're talking about over 100 million Social Security numbers that are out there, and a significant percentage of those numbers, I mean, not the biggest percentage, but certainly a meaningful percentage, were the Social Security numbers of children. And as a result, that's kind of how they get out there, and they're in the black market. In addition to which, in foster care, 10% of the children have become victims of identity theft. And that's because their information is on a card. That card is passed from home to home, and there's no security surrounding it. And unfortunately, you know, a significant percentage of identity theft is what's known as familial identity theft, or identity theft among family or friends. And oftentimes, there's no way to even tell that there is a problem, again, for years. Plus, if you have a situation where the parent is part of the theft of the identity,
what
you're
do you
never
going
to know.
What do you mean if the parent is part of the theft of the identity?
There have been many cases. I write about a case in the book with a woman who is a professor at Eastern Illinois University whose mother stole her identity for the purpose of opening credit card accounts and other accounts in her name. Her mother was literally living a double life. I had a close friend who's, when he was getting ready to go to college, his father said, let me help you get credit cards. You know, I'll quarterback the process for you. And while he was getting credit cards for his son, he was getting credit cards for himself. And he ran up $30,000 worth of bills. His son came to him and said, Dad, this is terrible. You got to help me. And he said, what are you going to do? I'm your father. You're going to turn me into the police? I had an aunt whose son basically stole her identity for years, totally refused to turn him in, took bankruptcy as opposed to reporting him to the police. So it's a tough situation when it occurs within the family. It happens a great deal in the family. And, you know, these are the things you confront. So when you say, what can a parent do to protect a child? Well, there are some things that you can do, which we'll talk about in a second. But the problem is, if you are part of the theft itself, there's no way you're going to be, you're going to make like you're helping your child, but you're not going to do it. So what parents can do, if your child is under the age of 13, you contact the credit reporting agency. And now, as I mentioned earlier, there are a number of states that are willing to create a file and freeze it. In some states, a couple of the reporting agencies are not that amenable to doing it, but they are amenable if you bring them a case where you think your child is a victim. They'll investigate it. If they find an issue, they will help clear the name of the child, and then they will freeze the file. I know that a law has been passed, a federal law, about protecting children in foster care situations, that before a child ages out of the foster care process, and of course it depends upon how many states adopt this law now that it's federal, that their credit will be checked, and in the event there's information on the file which is incorrect or clearly an indication of an identity theft, that file will be cleared, their name will be cleared before they age out of the process. If your child's over 13, you need to provide information directly to the reporting agencies. You need to also prove to the reporting agencies that you are the parent or guardian. Some parents think that's cumbersome. Frankly, that's the only way you can really protect the child, is to make sure the right person is really getting the information to and from the credit reporting agency. You can go to annualcreditreport.com, which is the free government-mandated website where people are entitled to a free copy of their credit report at least once a year, depending upon the state, at least once a year from each of the three agencies. You can put your child's Social Security number in. Generally, if it's below the age of 13, it just doesn't work. So these are the kinds of things people can do.
Okay, let's just, so we can just focus, I want to go back to the IRS. You wrote about a simple way to keep your tax refund safe, and you also wrote about an IRS request that could actually help identity thieves. So could you talk about those two things?
Well, the best way to keep your information safe is, first of all, exercise what I call the three M's, which is minimize your risk of exposure, and there are a variety of things. We can talk about that a little later.
Right.
Monitor, and then have a program about managing the damage. File early is one of my serious recommendations, because the identity thieves gather information about taxpayers. All you need is a name, a date of birth, a Social Security number, and then you doctor up a W-2 and you file a return. And most of the time, they file the returns as early as possible. Because the problem is, by the time the IRS actually sees all of the backup information, the W-2, the 1099, it's in July. They've already released the refund. And that's because they're under government mandate to release a refund as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks if you file electronically, 6 weeks if you file by snail mail. And because of this time lag, the thieves are really betting on that, and that's where they get the tax returns in and their refunds out. often before the taxpayer attempts to file or before the government actually is in a position to determine whether or not what they saw in a tax return was accurate or not.
Do you think filing electronically is part of the problem? I mean, should we not be doing that? Because it seems that's all accountants will do now.
No, I don't think filing electronically is the problem.
Okay.
Because it's not so much the interception of the electronic filing. It's the fact that information has just been filed sooner. A return has been filed sooner by a thief.
Okay.
Now, there was an incident with some of the e-filing programs where states were being overwhelmed and there was so much fraud that they were determining one state refused to issue refunds based on e-filings. Another state said that they wanted to halt e-filings completely for a day or two till they sorted things out. Three other states issued warnings. Part of that problem is that identity thieves were starting to run into the fact that the IRS was tightening up its filtering systems. And as a result, you know, it's kind of like, do you go to the house with the dog or the house that has no dog if you intend to burglarize it? And so you try to move on to the area that you believe is a little bit less secure than the one now that you're facing greater security issues. There is an effort nationally. There's a cooperative effort between the tax preparation organizations as well as the tax software companies and the states and the federal government in order to better coordinate, to indicate threat assessments if there's been any sort of breach anywhere. Although this really hasn't been breached, the problem is that people are going through the front door of a lot of taxing authorities because they have accumulated so much information by way of internet oversharing or breaches.
You mean
that they can go in and masquerade as if they're the taxpayer?
When you say internet oversharing, you're talking about social media sites?
Social media. You ever notice, I mean, people have this unquenchable thirst to share every possible piece of information about their lives in real time.
Right.
And people need to remember a few things. Number one, when you take a quiz and you give them information that you think is harmless, think of it as components of a nuclear weapon. In and of themselves, most of these components are harmless. Combine them, and suddenly you have an explosive situation. With answers to security questions, your favorite color, your first dog, the street you grew up on, your mascot of your high school, you know, where you went to college, in some cases even people give up their mother's maiden name, they don't realize that somebody out there could be collecting this information from that specific quiz who's not part of a website, or they're watching as the information comes in and they're collecting it. And these, in most cases, are the answers to security questions on different websites, in particular financial services websites. And you're giving away all this information. If you're traveling and you say to people, oh, I'm so excited, I'm leaving next week, I'm going away for 10 days to Spain, I'm going to go here and here and here, and then I'll be back on such and such a date. And then while you're gone, you're sending people back effectively, you know, minute-by-minute reporting with pictures and other art. What you're effectively doing is telling people where you are, which also means you're telling people where you aren't. So if they want to burglarize your home or if they want to stalk you where you are, when people post pictures, they forget that many of the social networking sites do not scramble the geotag. A geotag is a code in the digital photograph. That code can tell someone who's smart where that photograph was taken. Now, if in this photograph you have a particular park where you take your particularly small child and you're celebrating her birthday and you're giving out her name, you're giving somebody a lot of information where they could walk up to her and create the impression they've come from you to pick her up. Or if you're taking pictures of your artwork, your home, your new stereo system, your incredibly new car, or what some people do because they become so euphoric when some big event occurs in their life, their driver's license or their first credit card, all this information is going to people who will use this to break into your home, potentially kidnap your child, steal your identity because you've given them information about your credit card or your license. These are the kinds of dangerous things that occur on social networking.
What about these quizzes and all that? First of all, I guess we should be sure when we're taking them that they're actually a quiz that we should be taking. And secondly, should we lie? Like when it says, what's your favorite color? And it's blue, put in green. Just keep track of what we've put in and just don't tell the truth on Facebook or anyplace else.
Well, you know, I'm a great believer that sometimes that lying can be your best defense, but in a good way.
Right.
Like, for instance, when you're answering security questions, the issue is not veracity. The issue is consistency. So if they say, what's your mother's maiden name? You know, it could be Superman. They're not going to say, wait a minute, that's not your mother's maiden name, because we've done an independent investigation and proved it's not your mother's maiden name. All that matters is that any time they ever ask you the question, what's your mother's maiden name, you will answer with the same name that you gave when you set up the security answer in the first place. So do you really have to tell people what your favorite color is? Do you really have to give people your full birth date? Do you really have to give people your physical address? I mean, unless it's in connection with either a purchase or something that the government is requiring you. Let's say you renew your registration for your automobile and they're asking you to confirm an address. I mean, that's a different story, but it's also, hopefully, you're operating on a secure environment, which leads us to something else, too, and that is never, ever, ever send any information of a sensitive personal nature by way of email, ever.
Okay, hold that thought. We're going to come right back to it. Never send personal information via email. But let's take our short break first. We're speaking with identity theft expert and consumer advocate Adam Levin about his book, Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. We'll get the lowdown in a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Adam Levin, identity theft expert and consumer advocate, and the former director of the New Jersey Division of Consumer Affairs. He's a frequent television and radio commentator. He's the author of Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. So let's go, Adam, right to what you were saying. Never send personal data or information via email. How do you not do that?
Well, you do it by going to a secure environment, going to the website directly. I'll give you an example.
Yes.
I was recently signing up to become a patient with a new doctor, and I get this email going, great news, we found a way to actually speed up the registration process. We've attached to this email your medical history form. Just fill it out, and then email it back to us. And I looked at it and went, they didn't really say that. Now, they also said you could fax it, too. That's a little better, because if you fill it out and fax it and call the doctor's office and say, I'm about to fax you my medical information form, please have someone at the fax machine and confirm to me you received it, that's one thing. But sending anything that is of a sensitive nature by way of email is very, very dangerous. So you could call them on the phone, give them the information. You could fax them in the information, or if they provide a secure website that has the HTTPS, which indicates the level of security, and also a little lock on the site, that's a different story.
Okay, say that again,
yeah.
Because that's what we need to look for when we're on websites, the
HTTPS
and the little lock.
And you'll see a little lock on the site.
Right.
And that's why also when you get an email that says that we represent so-and-so, and even if the email says, do not respond to this email, but here's the website you need to go to, don't do that. Independently go to the website for that particular institution. And then when you get on the website, make absolutely sure that you see the HTTPS and the lock. But that's part of actually in Swiped. What I talk about is the three M's. And if
right,
I might,
let's start. Let's
perhaps,
do that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do
so
that.
The first M is minimize your risk of exposure. And you can do this in a variety of ways. Number one, you don't carry your Social Security card or that of your kids in your personal wallet.
What about Medicare? What about for people on Medicare where that is their Social Security number?
That is correct. And in fact, I have one of those. So what I do is I take the card, I make a copy of it, and then I white out most of the numbers except for maybe two. And then I carry it with me. And if someone at a medical institution says to me, hey, by the way, we need your entire Medicare number, I'll say, okay, well, I give them my number and I give them the letter because most of them are your Social Security number plus a letter.
What about
if they,
God forbid, you were...
stink, I'm going to go, do you really think in the world we live in that I am going to walk around with my Social Security number in my wallet? I don't think so.
But Adam,
most institutions will accept that.
Adam, what if, God forbid, you were in a car accident, let's just say, and you weren't conscious and they needed your information for the hospital, your health insurance information?
What I would do then is that I would put a number on the back of this card that I created or that I copied that would be my emergency contact number, and that person would have the information.
Okay.
But you don't, trust me, the likelihood of you having that kind of a life-threatening situation is nowhere near the likelihood that someone's going to get their hands on your wallet and their hands on your Social Security number by way of your Medicare card. I also don't carry your entire inventory of credit and debit cards. Because if you do and your wallet gets stolen, you've now put yourself in a very dangerous situation because now you got to remember everybody you have to call, on the top of which you're going to have to wait for your credit and debit cards. They could get instant access to your accounts. It's a dangerous thing. Use credit cards as opposed to debit cards when you do online transactions. Try to get a virtual credit card from your different credit card issuer. That's where the number changes. We have the new EMV cards. The chip and, well, they were supposed
right.
to be chip and PIN. They're chip and signature, actually, because someone decided the American public wasn't smart enough to remember PIN numbers. I don't know why they feel that way, but that was what they decided. Mm. But those cards only work in a card-present or in-store environment. They do not work online, because online you still have to give them your full credit card information. Don't share information online, in person or on the phone, with anyone you don't know. So if you get, for instance, a call from someone claiming to be your bank or your credit card company, and they ask you anything other than confirming a number of transactions to be accurate, hang up. You know, it's one thing if they say, hey, Bonnie, we're just going to run through some transactions. Tell us if these seem right or any are suspicious.
Right.
But if they start saying, is this your credit card number and expiration date? You go, yeah. And they go, just to confirm you're you, could you flip your card over and give us your security code? Run. Because I've seen scams where they do that. And then if you give them the security code, they go, oh, Bonnie, you know you are a victim of identity theft. Hang on for a second. Then you get another person comes on the phone and goes, can you to further authenticate yourself because we need to start the filing and get you set up for a police report. Could you give us your Social Security number? Now you've given them your card and your life. So do not click on links. Do not share information with people you don't know. Always be in control of the conversation. If you're authenticating yourself, which means if you go to a specific website and you begin to put information in and a little chat thing shows up or anything else, or they say, please call us, that's a different story. Because you're in control. If you go online and someone sends you a link, do not click on it. Secure your devices, not only your computer and your iPad, but also your smartphone. You know, a lot of people think it's a communication device. It's also a data storage device. There are programs out there that are available that give the same level of any malware, software, and the like for smartphones as well as for computers and laptops. Do some research and get one and make sure that it's most up-to-date and that it continues to update itself.
You mean virus protection for smartphones?
There is protection for smartphones. There are scanning programs for smartphones, too, now. In addition to which, long and strong passwords. Don't use password as your password. Don't use names that people who are familiar with you would know. Use symbols instead of letters in some cases. Upper and lowercase. Ashley Madison, very famous breach. Not a happy breach for anyone in it. The most favorite password, 123456 7.
What about on a Mac when, and maybe it's on PCs, I don't know, but when your Mac suggests a password that it'll store in your keychain, good or bad?
It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. I mean, look, you can also use password managers. That is a form of password manager. The other thing you don't want to do is you don't want to share passwords through your entire universe of websites, financial services, email, social networking, retailing. Don't want to do that because the problem is if you get breached in one, that means they got you every place else. Never forget also that any time you change your password, your user ID, or anything, confirmation of that always goes back to your email. So if you are required to change your password because of something that may have occurred in some other web environment, just to be smart, change your email password too. Two-factor authentication, very important.
What is that?
Anywhere that you can get that, that's where you're effectively, you know, logging into a site and they're sending you back something saying, we're going to send you a code. Please enter the code on this website. You know, the only danger there is if someone has stolen whatever device it is that they're sending the code back to.
Right.
That's a problem. But in general, two-factor authentication, certainly if the Office of Personnel Management had been using two-factor authentication along with other protective mechanisms, maybe we wouldn't have the disaster that we had with the breach there. Shred. You know, people, the lowly shredder, still an important
arrow. A cross shredder, right?
A cross cut, yes.
Cross
do
cut,
not
yes.
do ribbon cut.
Right.
For anyone who saw the movie Argo,
right.
you know why.
Exactly.
The other thing people have a tendency to do is they love convenience over security.
Right.
And as a result, when it says, would you like to save your password? Now, I'm not talking about one of those password management things. I'm talking about when they say that for your smartphone.
When your computer just says, remember me. Right?
Yeah, remember me.
Right.
I don't want to be remembered. I really don't. You don't want to be remembered either. Because the problem is if someone crawls into that device and you're remembered, they can just float right into your account. That you don't want to do. Also, where possible, don't use your email address as your user ID.
Oh.
And the reason is because email is not something that's that much of an international secret. And as a result, if they have your email address and that's part of your login credentials,
right.
now they got one half of the puzzle already, and they can assume that they could probably figure out a way to get the other part of the password.
Okay.
So you want to be careful about that.
Okay, one more short break, and we're going to continue. Yes, Paul, we need another break? Yes, we're going to continue our conversation with Adam Levin, the author of Swiped. Stay with us. To today's topical currents, Bonnie Berman speaking with Adam Levin, identity theft expert and consumer advocate, about his book, Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. We were talking about the three M's, minimizing, monitoring, and managing the damage. So we got to a lot of the minimizing. Why don't we... Adam, before we go to the monitoring and the managing, I just want you to talk about credit.com while we have the time to do that and the benefits of that.
Well, credit.com was created years ago as an online educator, advocate, and marketplace for consumer products and services. And it's really dedicated now toward answering the tens of thousands of questions that consumers have. About 30 to 40 million people come through the site on an annual basis. And the purpose, again, here is raising the level of financial literacy. Most people don't realize that, you know, when you think about the word portfolio, the Pavlovian response is investments, not credit or identity. And yet, they are two very important portfolios in your life as well. And whereas you would hope that a professional money manager is managing your investments, you need to be the professional manager of your credit and your identity. And credit.com is really dedicated toward helping people better understand what their responsibilities are to themselves and the different ways that they can manage their credit and their identity. And again, your credit report is your resume. Now, it can be your resume or it can be your rap sheet. And as a result, it's really up to you as to how you want it to come down. And you have a lot more control over this than you think you do. And that's why it's so important to understand how to build, nurture, manage, and protect your credit portfolio, and as a corollary of this, your identity portfolio as well. To that end, by the way, one other little piece of the puzzle for minimizing your risk of exposure is the credit freeze.
Right. Talk about that, please.
Yeah, and the truth is that there is still no national credit freeze right. However, some 47 jurisdictions have now given people the right to freeze their credit, and the credit reporting agencies, the big ones, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, have all kind of thrown up their hands and said, okay, what the heck, we'll just let everybody do it. Unlike a fraud alert, and I know you've heard a lot about those, when people have an issue where they think they've been breached, where you communicate with the fraud department of one of the credit reporting agencies, they notify the other two. When it comes to a credit freeze, you have to communicate directly with each of the three credit reporting agencies and then ask to have a freeze put on your file. What that means is that no one, including you, can gain access to your credit files for the purposes of granting credit unless they've been thawed, which requires either a PIN or a password, in most cases a PIN. And the reporting agencies are now doing that online with people, and it's a fairly simple process, more simple now than it used to be. There is some expense associated with it, unless you're a senior in most states or you are a victim of identity theft. There is a cost, generally about $10 to freeze, $10 to thaw. And if you forget to thaw when you walk into a store and say, I want that big screen TV and I want to do it on a payment plan, they're going to go, sorry, we can't get into your credit, so you're going to have to do a couple things to do it. Credit freeze, much more comprehensive than a fraud alert, but it's not the silver bullet, because it's not going to protect you against medical identity theft or criminal identity theft or child identity theft in most cases, or tax fraud and refund diversion. But it will help you if someone's attempting to open accounts in your name, new accounts in your name.
Right.
It also doesn't help you if someone steals your credit card and simply runs up an existing account or crawls into your bank account.
Okay, what about things like LifeLock, or I know Equifax has identity theft program. Are those good?
No, there are a lot of programs that are very good, and to get a really good handle on how good some of these programs are, the Consumer Federation of America has created a website, idtheftinfo.org, where a number of the identity theft service providers have signed up to be good citizens. It's the best practices group. And on that site also, they will give you a list of the most important questions to ask both yourself and anyone that will provide either monitoring or identity theft services for you. And it really helps you better understand what's out there and what you need to do, and makes people agree to use best practices when they're offering this information to consumers and offering services to consumers. So that's a good site to visit, idtheftinfo.org.
And what about this ID, let's see, it was something that you had, IDT911.com. What is that?
Well, IDT911, that's a company that I founded in 2003. It is one of the largest identity theft service providers in the country. It's worldwide now. We're in the U.S., Canada, and in the EU, soon to be in Australia. It is business to business. What it does is it sits behind over 600 major institutions, insurance companies, banks, credit unions, employee assistance programs, employee benefits programs. It has six silos: identity theft education, resolution, which is putting you back together again if you're a victim, identity management. There are a number of programs that actually help you. For instance, if you relocate, it will help notify government agencies, creditors that you're locating so mail doesn't go to the wrong place. If you lose documents as a result of a disaster, it could be a fire, a flood, whatever, it helps you recover. That it works in every possible area of identity theft, including medical identity theft, criminal, and the like. We have about 44 million people through our identity management programs and 800,000 businesses through cyber liability policies. And we're through many, many large and very familiar insurance companies and credit unions and banks and the like.
So about this freezing, why would, if you have something like IDT911.com, can they freeze your credit for you, or do you still have to go to Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax?
No, you have to do it.
You have to do it.
It is something that you have to do individually with the bureaus. Now, 911, for instance, we have a much different program than most people because people call us through their institution. They call us. We get them on the phone. We find out what the problem is. They can call us for anything from, I lost my purse or wallet. I got a letter, a notification letter from a company that I didn't even realize I did business with. I have an issue with the IRS or with my doctor or with insurance or whatever, and it's all based on the fact that it's not me. I've got debt collectors calling me.
Right.
And we can do a lot of things for people, and we don't operate with power of attorney, but what we do is we ask people that, we'll help them understand certain things they need to do. We'll even do it with them, but they have to at least initially be part of the process. And with credit freezes, it really is the you have to do this with the reporting agencies individually, but it is worth the time. It doesn't really require a great deal of time, but it's worth it.
Can you call them to do it, or do you have to do it online?
It really depends on the bureau. A lot of times people will call the fraud departments, and in a case like with 911, we will get the fraud department on the phone with the consumer with us. It depends. But there are companies that are out there that provide different kinds of services like that. But at the end of the day, the consumer has to be part of that process.
What about Apple Pay? Is that safe?
Again, is anything safe?
Well,
I certainly think it's a lot safer than things. And I do love the concept that it's fingerprint based,
right?
Which is important. It's certainly convenient. And, there are other systems that are being developed sort of like that. And then, of course, you have PayPal that uses tokenization, which is a bit safer when you're doing online transactions. So, we are moving more and more in the direction of interesting things that protect this. There was a story recently, MasterCard has developed a new thing now where you do an online transaction. They're still testing. And then right after you do the transaction, as part of the authentication process, you have to take a selfie and blink. So there's proof of life.
Wow.
But
couldn't you also doctor that with Photoshop?
Yeah, you could, because
you could get someone's eyes closed.
What you do is you have someone who has a really good CGI of someone's picture and then cuts out one eye and then they blink. So listen, the reality is anybody can find a workaround with anything. And if you want to talk about how really exposed we are, if you really want me to ruin your day,
well,
the Internet of Things, which is also going to be the sensor net for those who saw the movie Minority Report, that's where you literally walk by a billboard, it scans your retina, and suddenly an ad comes up that is something that you would prefer.
Adam Levin, we have to go. I wish we had longer. The identity theft expert, consumer advocate Adam Levin has written Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Fishers, and Identity Thieves. Credit.com, AdamLevin.com. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for tuning in. Produced by Richard Ives. Technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. And, of course, visit our website, WLRN.org, for audio archives. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.